let's think first of all about centers of galaxies. What do we expect to find in the middle of a galaxy? What I think in the first instance one should think about finding in the middle of galaxies is a lot of stars. Because let's face it, galaxies are made up of stars, quite a lot of them. 10,000 million would be a typical number. And when I'm in Sydney, I can tell people that's the number of rice grains you can pack into the Sydney Opera House. Is there a corresponding building in Melbourne that I should train myself to refer to? Whatever it is, it's one of those experiments I'd love to try, but I've never got round to. Anyway, you can calculate that it's about that number. And if you look at any photograph of a galaxy, you can see it gets much brighter towards the middle. That's where most of the stars are concentrated. So as you go towards the center, you expect the concentration, the population of stars, to get higher, whatever else there might be. Because the way galaxies form, you have gas being converted into stars. In regions where there are large numbers of stars, you expect all of that conversion to have taken place a long time ago. So, second expectation is that if you look at the center of a galaxy, there won't be any gas left, like the Orion Nebula you just saw on the screen, or the Eta Carinae region, where new stars are forming. You expect them to be pretty old. Centers of galaxies should be thousands of millions of years old. Ancient stars, mostly turning pale orange and thinking about expiring. And then there's the question of whether you've got exotic things, the black hole. And this comes to people's minds because when you look out at great distances towards galaxies, you find some that have clearly got something extra going on in the middle. Quasars are the obvious prime example. As far as we can tell, quasars are perfectly ordinary galaxies with something bizarre at the very heart. And whatever that bizarre thing is, we don't know for sure, but the best explanation we can give at the moment, the thing that fits best with all the facts, is a black hole that's busy swallowing stars. And as it does that, it gives off a lot of energy. So there's another thing that you might like to look for, to expect to find in the middle of galaxies. Now the problem is that when you look at normal galaxies, they are a very long way away. And because of that distance, a lot of detail in the middle just gets smeared into a tiny blob. Even with the Hubble Space Telescope, you cannot disentangle all of the things that might be present at the center of a galaxy. So, in order to understand what might be going on, you look at the closest galaxies. And pretty obviously, the closest galaxy is our own. So, in studying the center of our galaxy, we hope we are learning not just about what's going on in our galaxy, but in some sense getting a picture of what might be going on in other galaxies. And the questions that come to mind is it made up of stars? Is there a black hole? What else might there be there that we haven't even begun to recognize? So it's an important place to explore. It's actually a very difficult place to explore. And to do so, you have to develop new technology. Every couple of years, some new and important piece of equipment comes along that enables you to make advances. And our understanding of the galactic center over the last decade has gone in big steps as new equipment has come along. Primarily, there are two areas of equipment, two fields of equipment, that have provided valuable clues. One is radio astronomers, primarily the Very Large Array radio telescope in New Mexico. And the other is the advent of decent infrared systems. And I, being an infrared astronomer, I'm obviously going to tend to concentrate on the infrared. There's one other comment I'd like to make at this point, thinking about this technology. People are sort of saying, well, you know, surely all great things are being done by the Hubble Space Telescope now. And over the last month, I've been actually out of the country, but there have obviously been a few press releases going on, and a couple of people have now come to me since I got back and said, hasn't the Hubble Space Telescope found some hot stars or something in the middle of the galaxy? The answer is no. The Hubble Telescope has not. There was actually a press release put out by my collaborator and myself describing work we'd done with the Anglo-Australian telescope. And as far as I can see, nobody believes that these telescopes, these sort of ground-based telescopes, are doing anything, so it all gets attributed to the Hubble Space Telescope. So I'm actually rather glad to be here talking about the galactic centre to set the record straight. Okay, let me just have a brief digression into what I mean by infrared astronomy. In the year 1800, William Herschel tried an experiment where he shone sunlight through a prism and got a nice spread of colours on the table, blue, green, yellow, orange, red. And he was interested in how much heat was associated with each colour, so he put thermometers in the various colours. And he put one beyond the red end. And lo and behold, that was the one that rose to the highest temperature. He discovered that there was radiation coming in from the sun, passing through the prism, that his eye could not detect. And he demonstrated that that radiation was behaving just like any other light. It would bounce off mirrors, it was focused by lenses, and so on and so forth. And that was the start of the discovery that we humans have very restricted range of sensitivity to the vast wealth of energy that's pouring at us from space, and indeed even within this room. The infrared that Herschel discovered was what today we've come to think of as optical, because you can detect it with normal optical tools. But it's the start of something that goes beyond, and there is a section of the spectrum spanning the region from the visible that we are sensitive to, our eyes are sensitive to, going right through to the radio, where radio technology comes in. A huge chunk there that we call the infrared. We can actually sense infrared. If, for example, you turn on a radiant heater, before it even starts to glow red, you can actually feel the heat from it. That's infrared radiation. We feel it as heat. And so one of the facets of infrared astronomy is that you're detecting heat. That is actually not the one that's particularly critical to the work I'm going to describe tonight. The more important one is that infrared radiation goes through smoke, dust, haze, muck very effectively. That's why sodium streetlights work better in misty conditions than mercury streetlights. The orange of the sodium light penetrates the fog better. And in looking through our galaxy is a very dirty, smoggy place. Many parts of it are hidden. And it's the infrared that has allowed us to see through to the center of the galaxy, which is hidden to optical wavelengths. So the infrared, by seeing through, is getting closest we can to actually seeing, viewing the center of the galaxy. And the radio astronomers are looking at something totally different, as you'll see. When I look at a few galaxies, this one is very hard to study in the visible because it lies behind a patch of muck in our galaxy. It's the Circinus galaxy. And yeah, I know it's a bit fuzzy. Don't expect miracles of this device. You know, it's not like David Malan's photographs. We're getting there, but we haven't quite made it. Now, you can see this brown patch is some of the dust actually in the galaxy itself hiding it. This is, again, the fact you can see this better in the infrared than you can in the visible is because the infrared is seeing through all the smog in our galaxy. So that's a fairly ordinary galaxy. This one is Messier 87, which you may know has this little jet sticking out of it, and that demonstrates that we can see the jet just as well in the infrared as the optical people can. At least it demonstrates it if you happen to have a vivid memory and you've seen an optical photograph of this before. And when you go to an active galaxy, a galaxy that's almost like a quasar, then you get this very bright pink nucleus. This is an edge-on spiral galaxy, and the nucleus is really intensely bright. It shows up very well in the infrared. So that already tells us that if we start looking at galaxies, infrared is working rather like the optical. It can show quasar-like nuclei, black holes, whatever, and it can show jets if there are jets sticking out of the nucleus. And I have to show you Centaurus A. This, of course, is the well-known optical picture with this great dust girdle going across it. That dust is actually part of a distorted, warped plane, which sort of comes out and curls around in complicated ways. It looks like the sort of pancake I cook when it all curls up and makes a mess of itself. And what's actually happened is that in that obscuring dusty nebula that straddles Centaurus A, a huge number of stars have been formed, young stars. It's a star-forming region. And you can't see them in the optical because of all the dust. But here we can see through, and lo and behold, vast concentrations of stars. I've got a sort of a first estimate, and it really is an awful lot of stars there. It's the nearest radio galaxy. We believe it has an active core, but the optical people have never had a chance to see that core because of the dust lane. Here it is. This little spot of light is the active nucleus in Centaurus A. And I could talk for a long time about that, and I'm not going to, because it'll take me too far off the track. But we've learned a lot about this, and there are still some puzzles. A lot of puzzles. Okay, so when we look at galaxies, then in the infrared, we're going to see the sort of things you see in the optical. The center of the galaxy is somewhere in here, and you can see this huge dark patch, a great rift down the Milky Way. That's what stops optical astronomers seeing what's going on. You cannot get any useful information at all on the center of our galaxy at optical wavelength. You might just as well sit and stare at the inside of your dome. Light gets through that dust just about as easily as it gets through the walls of your dome. And if you took that out, if you took it away, and you could see the center of the galaxy, it would be quite bright. It would probably look, and it's a fuzzy thing, so it's a bit hard to define, but it would probably look about like a third magnitude star. And what you'd see would be a sort of little crescendo of light coming up in the middle. If you're a radio astronomer, the center of the galaxy looks like this. The colours here are actually trying to tell us something about the physics, although I'm not sure we fully understand it. The blue stuff, this big patch, is rather like the supernova remnants, the effects you get when a star has blown up as a supernova and the stuff, material spreads out into space as a sort of great shock wave. And radio astronomers see supernova remnants as very strong sources. The trouble is, this one's awfully big. If it is a supernova, and if it is at the distance of the center of the galaxy, which we're 98% sure it is, then it has to be in a much bigger explosion than any other. And perhaps this is a point to say that as we approach the center of the galaxy, where we have this huge concentration of stars, we also find a large number of other things. In some sense, the center of the galaxy is like a dustbin. All sorts of trash have found their way into there. And it can be very confusing. So some of the things that you'll see may be completely irrelevant to the big picture, but they may be hiding things that are more important. This is a close-up of the inner part. Now what we know for sure is that this, and this, and the bit that curls way down here, are gas. Remember I said earlier, center of a galaxy, you wouldn't expect to have any gas. That's gas, that's hydrogen. It's not being converted into stars. What's it doing there? It's one of the first questions that I don't think yet we have a good answer for, but I'm going to refer to this gas quite a bit. In addition, we have that. So that is a very strong radio source. It's unique in the galaxy. We don't know of any others like it. Its characteristics are very like those of quasars, in terms of its spectrum and the way it varies up and down a little bit and so on. And so when the radio boys saw this, both boys and girls saw this, they got excited. They said, hey, we're living with a quasar or a Seyfert nucleus or something in our galaxy. Here it is. And they went out and they studied this in every way they could, and they demonstrated it is smaller than our solar system. And it's giving out a lot of energy, and that's the sort of hallmark that people pick for black holes. Very, very compact. Lots of energy pouring out, all the right radio properties. This, known as Sagittarius A star, Sag A star, is the candidate for the black hole at the center of the galaxy. And the radio people were very pleased. This is the infrared view, the iris picture. Now you can see what I meant when I said that the If you took the dust away and looked by eye, you'd see the galaxy rising to a sort of crescendo of light in the middle. This picture measures about 5 minutes of arc across. Thank you very much. Which is, well, a sixth of the diameter of the Moon. If we were looking at any other galaxy, everything you see in that picture would be compressed into the central bright spot. See how many stars there are there? Well, you don't see how many stars there are there because for every one you can see on that picture, there's approximately another million that are too faint to see but which are contributing to the general glow. It's a very crowded place. There's a certain element of luck here too. You see how there's nothing down here, or not so many stars down here. And you see up here there's odd little dark patches. Those are regions where there is so much dust that even for the infrared people it's like looking through the wall of your telescope dome. It happens that there is a hole that runs down here that enables us to see through to the centre. And if we were in a slightly different part of the galaxy, we might not get that view, and we'd know much less. Okay, so there are the stars that we expect to find. And to first glance, the radio sees a black hole and gas that shouldn't be there, and the infrared sees just a whole lot of stars, and it looks perfectly reasonable. How do we reconcile these? This is a close-up of the very central region, a really tiny bit now, and you can see there's a whole range of different colours of the stars. In particular, there's some blue ones here. Those blue stars have been known for a few years. It wasn't clear what they were, but it was beginning to look as though they were fairly hot. And then there's a whole lot of orangey stars. This one that comes out white is in fact an M supergiant. It's a star very like Antares or Betelgeuse in Orion. These things are much redder than that, so if you could see these by eye, they would be intensely red, tomato-coloured. So there's a variety of stars. But the blue ones are interesting because we expect all the stars in the centre to be old. That was another thing I said at the beginning. Old stars are not blue. Stars as blue, as hot as this, cannot be more than 10, 20 million years old. That's not compatible with the galaxy centre having been made a few thousand million years ago. Something's going on here. A lot of work went into meshing the infrared and the radio. Finally, this was the picture that we created, the composite. The red is the radio, the streams of gas coming down, the blue, cyan. There's a lot of infrared sources dotted around that have nothing whatsoever to do with the radio. However, this patch is those little blue stars I just showed you. And that's right where these streams of gas seem to be heading. Right in that region is where the hot stars are. Now that might be telling us something. And this red thing is the black hole. And you can see that it hasn't got white in the middle. There's no infrared source there. That is where the radio source is. This was the highest resolution picture we managed to get in the infrared until recently when these new arrays came along. This is actually quite old data that we took on the Anglo-Australian Telescope. You could perhaps argue there's a faint source there, but it is extremely faint. As far as we're concerned, where the radio people see their big strong source, the dominant thing in the centre, we see nothing. You have to go into the physics a bit now. From the gas, from the condition of the gas, we know what temperature stars or black hole or whatever it is, we know what temperature it is that the gas is being illuminated by. We can work these things out from spectra. We know the brightness of the black hole in the radio. I'm calling it a black hole, we'll assume it is. We know the brightness in the radio. We know how much total energy is pouring out of the centre of the galaxy. We know that from some other more complicated measurements, but they're pretty reliable. There's a brightness of something like 10 million times that of the Sun coming out of the central region. By knowing all of these things, we can predict that if that black hole was providing all of this luminosity, if it was dominating what's going on in the middle of the galaxy, it would be brighter than any of these. much brighter, brighter than all of them put together, in fact. It isn't. So what this tells us is, okay, the radio people may indeed have something interesting, but it is not the dominant object. There is something else that's giving out much more energy. So, we could almost forget about that black hole. And if we forget about the black hole, we can almost forget about the radio, which is why I'm an infrared astronomer. Okay? Where do we go next? Okay, the radio people have done some clever things. They can work out how fast this gas is moving. This is a map of speed of the gas. So now we've got, there's a bit coming across here that they haven't mapped for reasons that are to do with the way the equipment was at the time. It's now understood, but when this slide was made, it wasn't detectable. And where the thing is sort of blue and green, it means the gas is coming towards us, and where it's red and orange, it means it's going away from us. And gas moves when something pulls it, and the something is a gravitational field, and if you're going to have a gravitational field, you've got to have mass. And so from this, we can actually weigh how much is inside there. There have been various attempts to measure how much mass there is in there. And within this ring, which is roughly where those little dark blobs were on my infrared picture, where you couldn't see the stars, within that ring, there is something like 5 million times the mass of the Sun. Much of that is made up of stars. If you went to the very center, you'd find the stars were 100 times closer together than they are around our Sun. 1 million times as many in a given volume. It'd be 1/100th of a light year to the next nearest star. Our sky, if we could live on a planet around a star at the center of the galaxy, or near the center, our sky would have a large number of stars as bright as the full moon. And many, many more, 1 million times as many stars as you see. It would never get dark. Who'd be an astronomer? There is a lot of debate that continues from measurements such as this as to whether the stars account for all the mass. And there is a very strongly held view, a large number of people, particularly in the United States, are quite convinced that in addition to all the stars, there has to be some single point object that weighs 2 million times as much as the Sun. And where do you think they find that object to be? Right on the radio source. So a lot of people say that black hole weighs 2 million times as much as the Sun. There's another group of people, and I tend to sympathize with this other group, who have valid reasons for at least presenting an argument that says that it is not more than 100 times the mass of the Sun. That's an enormous discrepancy, and we don't know how to reconcile those two yet. So there's a problem that we're still working on. Okay, this got people excited a bit. This is a spectrum. I think it's the only spectrum I'm going to show you tonight. But it shows the structure in an emission line of hydrogen. Hydrogen is being made to glow here, somewhere in this central region where the hot stars are, and where Sag A star is, this radio source. And this long slope down here says that there is gas tearing around at high velocities, like 1,000 kilometers a second. I mean, I don't know what it's like in Melbourne, but in Sydney, even the taxi drivers don't go at 1,000 kilometers a second. All right, this is fast. And so this got people excited. Ah, quasars have lines like this. This is a characteristic of quasars. And so when this came up, people were trying to prove that this was associated with the radio source, trying to build a sort of a quasar-like picture for the center of the galaxy. Enter IRIS. With IRIS, we were able to start making much more complicated maps. Now, these don't look very good. Well, they might not look good to you. I mean, to me, they're just unbelievably wonderful data. But then I took them, so they must be. To you, they may look pretty scruffy. But what we've been able to do here is map the galaxy and select specific types of things, map the center of the galaxy. This is hydrogen in a state that you're used to it in a laboratory, molecules. In space, there are a lot of hydrogen molecules, and you can't observe the little blighters in the optical or in the radio because they don't emit anything. Hydrogen emits in the optical when it's been ionized, when it's got a bad case of sunburn from an ultraviolet from a nearby star. It emits in the radio when it's in single atoms, and it sort of has this little sort of ping that the electrons do and comes out at 21 centimeters, but you can't detect the molecules. Infrared can. So we find here this big ring of quite dense gas. Now the radio people actually had found this ring by looking at carbon monoxide, ammonia, various other things. They hadn't seen it in hydrogen, which is, after all, the most abundant species. We don't know what that's doing there. It isn't stable. It cannot have been there for more than a million years. Some people think maybe there was an explosion in the middle of the galaxy that blew this stuff out, swept it out into a ring. It tilted relative to the galaxy. If it were lying in the plane of the galaxy, we'd see it as an edge-on thing. So it tilted, and that's a bit weird. Don't know why it's there, but the fact that it is there explains why we see those arms of hydrogen pouring in towards the centre, which is around about here on these pictures. Basically, the stuff is falling in. We've got a ring of gas that's been pushed out there, and the inner edges are just peeling off and falling in towards the centre. Exactly the same data set gives us a map of the hydrogen, and it looks very like the radio picture. We see this is the ionized hydrogen. We can see that in the infrared. This is actually the ionized inner edge of the ring. This is where the hot, the light that's coming from the middle is giving it the sunburn, and this is where the stuff is falling in, pulled by all the stars and perhaps by a black hole. But from the same data set, we found something very interesting, and that is these individual stars. Now here, we've picked helium gas, which doesn't sound very special. Helium is the second most abundant thing after hydrogen. Why doesn't it look like the hydrogen? But it's got these individual stars. And these stars are what has made us realize that things are quite different in the center of the galaxy. These are stars that are hot. They are unlike any other stars in our galaxy. They are very like some stars that are found in our neighbor, the Large Magellanic Cloud. And there, those stars are young, 10 million years old. What we've actually found here is a cluster, and when you work on the data properly, you can see about a dozen stars there. It's a cluster of stars that have been formed in the very center of the galaxy within the last 10 million years, and those are some of the most dramatic stars around. They're big, they're bright, they're throwing off material, they're pouring out ultraviolet radiation. They account for all the luminosity in the center of the galaxy. Everything you need to count is coming from them. They account for virtually everything. Everything except the radio source. Why are they there? The best explanation at the moment is that these, whatever produced the ring of molecular hydrogen, stuff has fallen in, and those streams of gas have collided in the middle, and that's caused stars to form. People have other ideas, and it's a weird place, and maybe something different would be right. But for the moment, let's accept that as a reasonable explanation. What in effect has happened is that the center of our galaxy has been rejuvenated somehow by this big explosion. It started off a whole new burst of star formation. We know of galaxies like that. We call them starburst galaxies. In starburst galaxies, there are millions of stars formed. In our galaxy, there's, well, there are 15 or so. So I think what we've got is a miniature version of a starburst galaxy. That is what's lurking in the center. That is the sort of hideous mess you get if you put those three together, the blue being the helium stars, the green being the ionized hydrogen, the red being the molecules, and you can see around here how the sort of molecules wrap around the edge of the ionized hydrogen. You can see exactly where the ultraviolet, where the sunburn's got to, working its way in. And this doesn't look much, but it's the latest data we got last season. Down here is just a straight picture of the star field in the center. Up here, we've picked iron. And the iron is finding another group of stars. They're not the same as the helium stars. It's a second group. They're a little bit less massive. So So we've suddenly discovered it's not just a group of 15 of these weird things like you find in the Large Magellanic Cloud. Those 15 are the biggest and brightest, but there's a whole trail of fainter stars which we can identify this way. So we're now getting a clearer picture that we've got this range of stars that have been formed about 10 million years ago. And it was when we put all of this together that we realized that it was perhaps worth just a little press release to say, hey, this is really what's going on in the center of the galaxy. And that's the thing that came out. My collaborator Michael Burton handled it. Some of you may have seen mention of it over the Christmas period. I think that concludes the galactic center.